Some months, you're flooded with jobs and make multiple placements. Other months, a big fat zero. This feast and famine cycle isn't just stressful, it's holding you back and keeping you from real predictable growth. Here's the good news. There's a reason it's happening, and you can fix it. The 7-Figure Freedom Scorecard is a free tool designed for recruitment business owners. In less than 10 minutes, it evaluates your firm across the 6 key pillars of sustainable growth: clients, candidates, team, operations, marketing, and strategy. Your personalized scorecard will reveal what's working and what's broken, and the fastest way to build a recruitment business that generates consistent 7-figure revenue month after month. Stop riding the revenue roller coaster and take the free scorecard now at recruitmentcoach.com/scorecard.
You know, I started in recruitment 16 years before the internet was invented. You know, remember when the internet came and job boards and LinkedIn, they were going to destroy recruitment? Well, they never did. We never made more money since those things came along. I actually think now I have never seen a time that offers more threat.
AI was supposed to make recruitment faster, smarter, more efficient. According to Greg Savage, it's made it worse.
AI has made promises. The AI acolytes say it's going to make recruitment more efficient, and indeed I believe it will, but it hasn't done that yet. It's made it significantly worse. It's slowed it down. There's no trust in anything.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and this is Greg's third appearance on the show. This is a really special one because it's our 300th episode. When I launched the podcast back in 2019, Greg was my very first guest. A lot has changed since then. We've had the pandemic, the hiring boom, and now AI is reshaping our industry. So it felt right to bring him back for this milestone conversation. Greg is the founder of 4 highly successful recruitment businesses. He's the author of 2 best-selling books, including The Savage Truth, with more than 20,000 copies sold. Named a LinkedIn top voice, Greg has built a reputation for telling the truth about our industry and where we're headed, even when it's uncomfortable.
The contingent, multi-listed, perm market, which is what most recruiters do, where the client gives the job to 4 agencies and says, here's a bone, little doggies, run on the beach. And the one who gets the bone, you know, the other's tough, you don't eat today. I think that is over.
In this episode, we revisit Greg's predictions on AI and the future of recruitment from our previous conversation.
I encourage people to take a strategic approach to this AI. Don't make any knee-jerk decisions. If something sounds too good to be true, it often is at the moment.
We'll unpack what's really going on, why AI has made this job harder in many ways, and explore what recruitment leaders must do to avoid automating dysfunction.
Ask yourself, does this piece of tech improve the candidate experience? Does it improve my recruiter's experience? Does it improve the hiring manager's experience? And if you get no to any of those, do not do them.
You'll hear Greg's insights on why AI presents significant risks for recruiters.
Trying to automate everything, I believe, is a mistake. It's the only business where what you're selling can say no, and therefore
where the real opportunities lie, and how to stay relevant in the next 5 years. All right, Greg, welcome. Great to see you again.
Mark, nice to see you on the other side of the world. It's a sunny Sydney afternoon. I can't imagine what's happening with you over there this time of night.
It's dark and wet in Scotland, 7 a.m., but nice. It's worth getting up super early for Greg Savage. And so this is a momentous episode, Greg.
Is it?
You won't know this, but this is our 300th episode. And you were my very first guest, episode number 1, which would have been published, I think, in November 2019. So just before the COVID pandemic.
Wow.
And I thought it would be fun to get you back on for episode number 300. So welcome.
Well, and congratulations. That is a momentous achievement, 300, 300 episodes. And so 6 years ago, well, the world has changed, and not just the pandemic, other things. So that's on the agenda, I'm sure.
Exactly. Well, actually, so this is your third time on the podcast. I actually have some notes here. We're going to make this one-page summary available in the show notes for people. Greg Savage's predictions on the future of recruitment from September 2023. So I'll give you the highlights because I'd love to hear like what you think has changed since then, because although it's scarily accurate, but...
Oh, good. I'm glad you said that because I thought you were setting me up for a real embarrassing moment.
I'm not setting you up.
Let's hear what I said that day.
All right. So in September 2023, you said there's sort of five things that are kind of related. AI will automate parts of recruitment, but not all. So sourcing, screening, writing job ads, admin tasks, data processing, and even matching. Number two, the human skills become more critical. So, you know, selling, influencing, leading, skills that require empathy and kind of connection or decision making, those are going to be human. Number three, the danger of blind tech adoption. The wild west of AI tools, people calling everything AI enhanced or whatever, and people not really knowing, you know, what it's all about, but just, you know, buying into the AI hype. Number four, AI has made some things harder, not easier. And for example, candidates using AI, you know, to finesse their CVs or even like fake interviews, not really knowing the answers. And number five, technology should enable human connection, not replace it. So what do you think? What's changed since you made those predictions?
Well, I have to say, whoever said that's a pretty smart guy, because those things, it was only 2 years ago, three maybe, but those things, to be perfectly honest with you, Mark, and this people won't enjoy hearing, the only thing that has happened is that they have got significantly worse.
Worse how?
Well, let's pick on some of the things that you said. The ones like AI has, for example, AI has made promises and the AI acolytes say it's going to make recruitment more efficient. And indeed, I believe it will. But it hasn't done that yet. It's made it significantly worse. It slowed it down. There's no trust in anything. There is fraud on a industrial scale. I think it was Firefish put out a little report just 2 days ago, and 40% of tech candidates have inflated their resumes and their applications to the point where they are dishonest. You may have heard, this is just quite interesting, that the FBI had discovered over 1,000 North Korean agents that had secured senior jobs in finance and normal jobs with Fortune 500 companies using fraudulent interview techniques. And they did that for the money, which go to the North Korean regime. Of course, those companies in America thought they were hiring Bob Smith from Seattle, but they weren't. And not only that, they know that they're on the inside of all the business strategies. Now that you might say, well, that's at the extreme, but I better jump in and say there's a lot of good going to happen, and there's a lot of, we've got to run towards the technology. And when we get to those questions, I'll address it. But for now, there is an army of AI experts on LinkedIn and other places, evangelists, so-called thought leaders. They've never implemented AI in a recruitment environment. They've never been in a recruitment environment, and it's their first ever tech startup. And they are lecturing everybody. All they are doing is amplifying the claims of the snake oil salesman, AI vendors. Not all of them, of course, but many products now actually automate dysfunction. You know, there's always been a lot of dysfunctions in recruitment, and we're all working to stop them, like poor candidate service, multi-listed job orders, resume races around town. AI has taken the parts of recruitment that are shit and made them more efficiently shit.
Excellent. Okay? Good description.
So that's what's happening. And let me tell you, this was done by a guy in England. I think his name is Martin Redstone. I might have the right guy. I might be quoting the wrong sources, apologies, but I could find it for somebody. He did a test of the big large language model screening services, you know, like ChatGPT, Gemini, Flat, Grok, right? He put 100 candidates into each of them, gave it a job spec, did a beautiful job of fully giving the brief to these AI recruiters. And he asked for a shortlist of five. And there was only a 14% overlap between the three of them. So how good's that? Not only that, he ran it the next day. And the same technology gave a different shortlist. And not only that, he knew who three or four perfect candidates for the job were, and they never, ever came up on the shortlist. They had been biased out of it. So, Mark, it's really catastrophic. I can give more examples of what is actually happening. There are examples of improvements, but the overwhelming reality, which you don't hear, you just don't hear about, because all we hear about is how wonderful AI is. And it's mostly not, nor should it be, because it's right at the beginning of the AI journey. It's what, I know AI is 10, 15 years, but so let's say 3-5 years in the modern times. What did the first motor car look like after 3 years compared to what it looks like now? So we've got to wait a bit.
Well, exactly. I was going to say, what you're saying about the screening and matching, 100%. I was having this conversation yesterday with one of our clients, and he recruits in the AI space, and I would say he is AI native. He's very comfortable and fluent with LLMs, but also the real AI that's been around for a long time before ChatGPT. And he's experimenting with, giving his ChatGPT trained on the job spec and, the brief and everything, matching and prioritizing a list of candidates and putting them into columns A, B, and C. And he said it failed spectacularly because he knows some of the candidates who should have been A's and ChatGPT thought they were C. Now, but having said that, the automobile example you gave, you could argue that it's only going to keep getting better and better and better. And eventually that will, not be in the province of humans anymore. So I don't know if that's true.
It will get better. I think what we've got to understand is the damage it will do to people who use flawed AI now.
Right.
So that's the thing.
At least he was aware
that this was
wrong, right?
Yeah. Well, he's aware because he's on the inside, right? He understands it. But what about the hundreds of thousands of owners of recruitment companies which have got less than 10 staff who barely understand tech very well in the first place? They're struggling with this changing dynamic. They're being showered with all these promises. They don't even know where to start. So that's what worries me about, I think that in all the years I've been in recruitment, which is a long, long time, it's my fifth decade, I started in recruitment 16 years before the internet was invented. So you can laugh. On the other hand, you want to interview me, so I must still know something. But I've seen all the technology changes, and despite all of the, remember when the internet came and job boards and LinkedIn, they were going to destroy recruitment. Well, they never did. We never made more money since those things came along. But I actually think now I have never seen a time that offers more threat to recruiters and recruitment company owners. But on the flip side of the same coin, I've never seen a time where there's more opportunity. So I'm not nervous for our industry, but I'm nervous for certain of us in the industry. I think we'll end up with a lot less people in it, even though the revenues will grow.
I did want to ask you about this because I've interviewed people with diverging opinions on this. So two people you may know. So Johnny Campbell, I had on the podcast, he was saying that, within a few years, there's going to be 50% less recruiters in the world to produce the same amount of work, essentially, which sounded pretty dire for those of us working in the industry, whether it's agency side or in-house. But then I had Matt Alder on the show, and he's his podcast is the Future of Recruiting, and he believes that between AI dystopia and AI utopia, where if we manage things properly, it's going to be AI utopia, and there's going to be more opportunity, more growth. And although the jobs that we're recruiting might be different, they're still going to be plenty of opportunity for agency recruiters.
I'd be happy to speak to that, Mark. Yeah. I know of both those guys. I actually know Johnny Campbell pretty well. I saw him in Czech Republic just before Christmas at a conference. We were both speaking out. We had a good talk about AI and we largely agreed. Unfortunately, the conversation strayed onto rugby and then things diverged dramatically. I am more, if you had to say which of those views, I'm more to the Johnny Campbell view. I think this will happen and you might find this interesting. I think executive search, retained search, which is based on connections and sophisticated communications and outreach and a value perception from the client, I think that will grow. And indeed, if you look at the results of Heidrick & Struggles and Russell Reynolds and those sorts of organizations, they are growing rapidly at the moment. I think that part of recruitment, obviously I'm not saying 20 years, but just for the short 5 years, let's say, I think that will grow. I think temp and contract will grow. I think we're entering a world of the gig economy is growing. I think kids who are 8 or 9 now might end up having several jobs at the same time in the future. I think while temp will be heavily impacted by technology and sort of shift filling of nurses and labor hire will be largely automated, sophisticated contract placements will still require recruiters, and I would be building my temp business. But I think the contingent, multi-listed, perm market, which is what most recruiters do, where the client gives the job to 4 agencies and says, here's a bone, little doggies, run on the beach. And the one who gets the bone, the other's tough, you don't eat today. I think that is over. And it will take time. And I think what will happen is companies in that field who want to survive will do temp. And they will actually transition to an exclusive, almost executive search style of service, even for more junior roles. And they'll be niche and they'll add value and clients will value them for their expertise and their insights. But a resume race where it's speed over quality, well, the technology will disrupt that completely. So I think we will have less people working in recruitment, but I think our revenues will grow as an industry. So that's where I sit on it.
Fantastic. All right. Interesting. What's this is a tangent, Greg, so you may or may not have an opinion on this, but just in terms of threats, Salesforce is investing billions into their agentic AI, technology, embedding it within Salesforce. And then companies like Adecco have partnered with them to embed their AI agents into their recruiting workflows. I do think that the videos that they're putting out, and they're hiring like Hollywood stars to promote this agentic AI, platform. Now, I do think there's always a lag between the promise and then what it actually delivers. But to what extent do you think AI agents will replace a lot of what the day-to-day, job of a agency recruiter involves?
Words like agents and agentic are just labels that they put on technology. It's not actually anything different to what they've been talking about all along. I will try to answer that question, but not in a way you expect. The first thing I'll say, though, because you mentioned Salesforce, and they're not an ATS, but I think the other thing to watch out for is that the legacy ATSs, I'm not going to mention names, but the big ones, and not all of them. But increasingly, their whole business model is flawed because they're sprinkling AI terminology and the odd AI enhancement on top of what is already a dinosaur system. It's a band-aid strategy. In fact, my analogy, which will upset people, is they're basically selling cocktails at the bar of the Titanic after the iceberg hit. They're saying, yeah, here's my AI. But you actually need to build. Yeah, one of the other linked to this, one of the big problems is tacking on all these different bits of AI and it's not integrated and it doesn't fit your process is a disaster. And people are doing that right now. And trust me, I won't come back on your program in another 5 years, but you can quote me and I'm pretty confident that you will see a lot of damage done for people who tack on bits and pieces of AI, which won't deliver what it promises anyway, but it won't integrate. And therefore, your recruiters will be unable and unwilling to deal with these multiple tools. But to answer your question, I don't know what Salesforce is doing, but I think it comes down the promise of agents or technology, whatever you want to call them, taking the job of the recruit. I don't believe. First of all, let me say this. It's a much more, well, I shouldn't say this about something I'm going to say, but I think it's a smarter thing than it sounds. Just because something can be automated.
Here's what I keep hearing from clients who have switched to Recruiter Flow. They are executing faster, not working longer hours, but using a platform that just makes sense. Recruiter Flow is an AI-first ATS and CRM built specifically for recruitment agencies and executive search firms. No confusing menus, no endless buttons you'll never use. When someone new joins your team, they're up and running in hours, not weeks. And here's the thing. When your recruiters spend less time fighting with software, they spend more time doing what actually matters, having conversations with clients and candidates. Several of our clients at Recruitment Coach have made the switch, and they're telling me it's transforming their operations. If you want to see it in action, book a demo at recruitmentcoach.com/recruiterflow. That's recruitmentcoach.com/recruiterflow. You already understand the benefits of posting video content on LinkedIn. The problem is time. After all, you're a recruiter, not a full-time content creator. Trusted Voice Video was built for busy recruitment business owners who know that video matters, but they don't want another job added to their plate. One 30-minute session per month gives you 30 days of short-form video content. We plan the topics, guide the conversation, edit the footage, and deliver ready-to-post videos. You'll never be stuck wondering what to say. You'll never worry about how you look or sound. We coach you through the session so you come across as clear, confident, and credible, even if you hate seeing yourself on camera. My colleague Sanjay manages the whole process. He already produces this podcast and my own video content, so if you like my content, then why not let us create yours as well? If you want your content working for you 24/7, head to recruitmentcoach.com/video and book a free strategy call.
Is not a good reason to automate it.
Right. Well, you mentioned earlier automating dysfunction, and you give the example of, you know, screening and matching. Mm-hmm. What are some other examples of automating dysfunction that you're seeing?
Okay. I get pitched AI tech every day if I allowed myself to. All these guys are, you know, they're tech bros, and they're all bros. They're going to change the world. They've invented the new recruiter, everything. And here's some examples. So one guy said to me, our tech is so good, Greg, you won't believe it. What we can do is my tech can tell when a candidate has had a new baby in the family, and it automates a message. And I said to him, mate, why the fuck would you do that? Why would you automate a message? That's the happiest time in a family's life. If you want to wish them well, call them up, take them for a drink, wish them well authentically, or don't do it. He could not get what I was saying. He said, but it's efficient. So another guy tells me, okay, so we can screen 1,000 people and we can get it onto shoulders. And don't worry, all the unsuccessful candidates get an email. So I said, so what happens to the shortlist of the 5 people? Our tech can do a basic, then it goes to a human. And he thought he got me excited because I mentioned human. Goes to a human. And I said, okay, yeah. And then it's a second interview and a third interview. And I said, so if one of my candidates or a candidate has a first, second, and third interview, and she's very, very close to getting the offer, but she doesn't get it, what happens? He said she gets the same email as all the rest of them. I said, really? So she gets the same email that says, thanks for applying, goodbye, when she's been through 5 hours of interviews. And come, he said, you don't, that's an example of people not understanding. That is when, and I'm not only talking about just being a human being and empathy and supporting that person through what might be a very distressing knockback, but also that's the time a recruiter builds authenticity and trust and then guides that candidate to the next opportunity. You're going to give that to an agent? I'll give you one more, Mark, because you asked.
Move on, Greg, following up on your example there, you know, everybody listening knows that the candidates you speak to who most of whom will ultimately not get the job, are your best sources of candidate referrals, of job leads, of future opportunities. If they've had a great experience with you, they're going to land somewhere. And then if you've had a relationship with them and you supported them and you prepped them for interviews and everything, then they're much more likely to give you the business when they're wearing their client hat instead of their candidate hat. We can't delegate that.
No, exactly. And that's an example of just because something can be automated, it shouldn't be. Very quickly, one other guy told me that, you know, his thing will do it all the way through, including the job offer. So I said, your tech is going to offer the successful candidate the job. And I said, do you want me to bet you a lot of money who would win between your tech and me offering someone a job? Even though I'm only a good recruiter, not a great one, I will get that offer closed if it's the right deal, because I will hear the tone in his voice when he says, yes, he's interested, and I'll tell he's not. And I'll understand. I'll ask questions and I'll uncover and I'll quickly get onto the client to solve it. He needs a car park if we're going to do this deal, whatever it might be, right? So, you know, one way I've said this to tech people, I've said it to recruiters too, but they get it, but tech people don't. In recruitment, it's the only industry that I know where what we are selling can say no. And when I say that to tech, because the way they think about it, the tech, not all of them. I mean, they're much smarter than me. I'm not, please don't get me wrong. They're 1,000 times smarter than me, but they don't understand which parts of the process to automate in many cases. And what I mean by that is, you know, books used to be sold across a counter. They sold by Amazon and Uber and everything else. It's all automated, but you're buying something which is a commodity. When I buy a book off Amazon, the book doesn't go, you know what? I don't like Greg. I'm not going to go with him. The book comes. But if I place a candidate in a job, do everything perfectly, counter the counter offer, tie up the salary, talk her through her resignation, I'm still going to get a call the day before she starts saying she's gone to go live with her boyfriend in Peru or whatever. And that is what every recruiter listening to this has got 1,000 of those stories. And I think what we need to understand is a lot of the work, and we've talked about a lot of them, of the components of the job that can be automated, that'll get better, it'll get more efficient. I think some of the assessment even will get better. But those who have gone all the way with that have not enhanced the recruitment process. They're not getting a better outcome. Like the experience for recruiters who are being flooded by inappropriate resumes for every job, and the experience of candidates, good ones who can't get through the system, is at its lowest point, I believe. I've got no science or empirical evidence, but I feel it's at its lowest point, and it's mostly driven by inappropriately used technology.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, you've touched on the risks. What do you see as the opportunities then?
Oh, I think there are significant opportunities. I think, but it's going to come hand in hand. Let me put it this way. I think everyone who owns a recruit company and every recruiter has got to say to themselves, I need to work on myself as a project to make myself fit to get the best out of the changing world. And they've got to run towards the tech, the phrase I'm using. That means really try to understand it, not as a tech person, but try to understand how it impacts your business. And I think that we can work through a lot of different areas in sourcing, screening, matching, even shortlisting, reference checking, candidate outreach, cleaning. The quickest benefit you can get from AI right now is getting good AI to take your database that you're so proud of. We've got 500,000 candidates on our database, says the owner of a recruitment company. That database is a candidate graveyard. It's full of dead people. And when I say dead, I mean, well, some of them might be dead, actually. You wouldn't know because you don't interact with them. But they're definitely dead to you. I mean, the stats tell us that something like 40% of jobs that are filled by recruiters where the candidate has come from a job board, at a screening process, in 40% of cases, that candidate was already on their database. Fix that using tech and you'll make a massive leap forward. Huh? And there's good tools, sorry to interrupt you, there's good tools which will do outreach and have conversations and find out that a candidate's salary is now 80,000, not 70, and she lives in Preston, not wherever, and she's now a manager, and that will all be done automatically. And then there's a little thing that goes to her, says, would you like to have a chat with a recruiter just to sound out the market? Yes, bang, set up on a VC logistics, done. The recruiter has a 10-minute chat. you know, you can get something to do that to 2,000 candidates in a few days. Go and ask your recruiter to find 2,000 candidates when they've got 40 jobs to fill. You know, good luck.
No, it's a great example. I think you and I both know Manan Shah at Recruiter Flow. I think they're doing a great job of automating the database update, making sure the records are refreshed, the contact information is up to date. And when people change jobs, then we're able to follow that movement of where they've gone. So I think there is some promise there.
Definitely what they've done at Recruiter Flow is good. There's a company in Australia called Synaptico, which basically that is their business model, which is you can send out 2,000 emails. You give the database a profile, and it will find people. It'll send them a text if you want, and it will inquire, and the person can then update their details, or it can take it further and has a reasonable conversation with them and gets it to the point where a recruiter can take over. And I love that, because long before AI, I was talking about the wasted resource of our database. And you know, all the stats pointed to that. So I think that is a very, how can I put it? I'll use a cliche. It's a low-hanging fruit for people to get a return on AI almost, well, not immediately. It'll be hard. There's work to do. But that's the sort of thing that you can't get your highly paid recruiters to do. When I say can't get, they won't do it, but it's not even economically viable to do it, because they've got to be better at the influencing skills and getting out in front of clients.
Exactly. So you've already started to answer this question, Greg. How should leaders of recruitment companies respond to both the threat and opportunity of AI? You've said, well, first of all, run towards the technology, and let's make sure that we are aware and trained on, you know, what the tools can do, and we're using them appropriately. Secondly, and possibly more importantly, is working on ourselves, developing those skills that are, you know, still essential in terms of influencing, you know, empathy, making a connection, and so on. Any other, do you want to amplify either of those, or is there anything you would add?
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about that. I think we have to be empathetic towards the situation for owners of recruitment companies. We've got a lot to do anyway, and now people are throwing all this buzzwords at them and making threats and promises. And all I'm encouraging them to do is not deflect it to somebody more junior. You can have project people on it. But you, if you're going to lead the business, you need to understand the sorts of conversation we're having today. And you need to understand the sorts of questions you should ask of any proposed AI, which we can talk about later. The first thing I'd say to help people in this is, if you're faced with any piece of technology that is pitched at you, or you're discussing or evaluating, just ask the question, what recruitment problem of mine does it solve right now? You will see some of these tech guys glaze over. You know the answers I've had to that? It's efficient. It'll save you money. I said, no, okay. I love those ideas. Kind of esoteric. What problem does it solve? Well, it's AI, Greg. I said, no, let me phrase this a little bit more clearly. What problem will I solve in my business? I'm faced with the problems. And they can't even, some can, of course. Some can't. But start from that. And when you evaluate it, definitely it should be taking away drudgery, hack work. I mean, what recruiter came in and said, you know, I'd really love to comb through the database to update candidate details. That's what I'd like to do today. And when I finish that, I'd love to screen 500 people for a junior job. You know, that's what I'd absolutely adore. And then I'd like to type up long resumes or cover notes or whatever. So it takes the drudgery away from recruiters. But the important thing is, if you believe, you have to take a view on this. If you believe that the moments of truth in recruitment, those moments where you can influence, the ones we've talked about, offering a job, countering a counteroffer, even pitching a job to a candidate, taking a job description. Fuck me. I mean, the amount of recruiters in the world today that will get a job description from a client emailed to them, and the client will say, could you help me fill this job? And the recruiter will start looking for candidates. That is a slippery slope to recruiting hell, and you will not be a recruiter even next year, because you will just be beaten. You know, I think that prediction I made about contingents, it's not going to happen overnight, but their fees will be speed and resumes will be considered a commodity. Advice, insights, and really tailored shortlists that meet the brief, and the brief becomes a diagnosis. The recruiter has to have the skill to diagnose the situation because of what the job spec has probably hauled out of a file from when they recruited 6 years ago, and the job's changed. We know these things, but mostly recruiters default to speed, and then that's not going to work because the tech will beat you. So I think the other thing I would say to any owner of a recruitment company is ask yourself, does this piece of tech improve the candidate experience? Does it improve my recruiter's experience? Does it improve the hiring manager's experience? And if you get no to any of those, do not do them. Why would you? But you do want to take away from the recruiter stuff that absorbs their time, but then the recruiter skill set has to change to include true consulting, advisory, questioning, and being able to prove their value. You actually, ironically, when I say this, the tech guys go into a funk. You actually want technology that allows recruiters to spend less time on their keyboards. That's the irony.
Right. And more time on the phone or in
more time on the phone, face-to-face, VC, engaging, right? Because the tech's going to do that. So I encourage people to take a strategic approach to this AI. Don't make any knee-jerk decisions. If something sounds too good to be true, it often is at the moment. And focus on things like, does this integrate with my current tech stack? Will my people even use it? There's a lot of AI that's been bought that people are not even using. They're gravitating back to what they're comfortable with. So I think those are a few thoughts that I would.
Great. I like the filter that you're applying when you're evaluating a tool or supposedly AI platform. What problem does it solve for me? Does it improve the candidate experience, client experience, and the recruiter experience? Those are some really good filters we can apply to, you know, is this legit? Should I be focusing on this, or is this BS and I can safely ignore it? I also like the moments of truth concept. So like the kind of key moments in the placement process that the deal hinges on. So it's the discovery call or job intake call where you're actively taking the job order and diagnosing the problem. Then it's the same on the candidate side. It's the in-depth, you know, conversation with the kid. Well, first it's pitching the job. Then it's the in-depth conversation with the candidate. Then it's the prep and the debrief, pre and post interview. And then it's the offer management process. Those conversations, yeah.
Exactly. And there's also, those moments of truth are equally as powerful on the client side. So yes, when you're taking the job, but also I wouldn't send a shortlist of four candidates to a client. I would be training my client. It's a bit of coaching my client over a period of time that when I'm sending my shortlist, we will first discuss those candidates because I will explain why they're on the shortlist. And I will coach my client on, yeah, he's going to assess the candidate, but I'll coach my client that he or she is selling to the candidate. This candidate really wants to learn the ABC tool, and you've got that there. So can you include that? This is me, a recruiter tool. Can you include that discussion about the ABC tech? Because that's going to make candidate A very keen on your job. Now, those sorts of things are the nuanced influences, because, and that's why it makes me laugh when recruiters even say to each other, wow, recruitment's not rocket science. It just shows it's not rocket science. It's possibly a lot harder. And I'm not being facetious.
Yeah.
because it takes a blend of incredible influencing listening skills to do it well. Now, a lot of recruiters, particularly post COVID, when we had that little boom, they made a lot of money by just referring resumes around at pace. That is over. If that's over, it's going to change. So a couple more things I'd encourage people to ask if they're anticipating or evaluating tech is what decisions is this technology actually making or influencing? You can't assume anything. What decisions does it make? And sometimes the people who are selling you the tech can't answer it. Can your product be configured to match our hiring process, or do we change our workflows to meet yours? It's a very, very good question. And it opens up a can of worms. Even ask them this. If your model makes a mistake, because I'm sure it will, because they all do, who's accountable? What's them run for cover? What's them run? Ask them things like, what happens if a skill of a candidate is implied, but it's not actually stated? How do you assess for that? Now, a good recruiter can go, hey, you worked at ABC accounting firm. I know they specialize in insurance. Did you do a lot of insurance? Whatever, I'm making it up. But does your tech do that? And the answer is universally. And does it actually learn? Can it learn, or does it just match keywords? Even that, and I'm not a tech expert, but that is you ask these people that, and they're like, mostly they don't know, or they go, oh, well, it's actually automation. It's not even AI, which in itself is not a bad thing, but don't sell me AI. If all you're giving me is if A happens, I'll give you B.
Right.
And ask them about the stats they've done on bias within their system. So that, anyway,
absolutely.
There's a lot of things there, Mark.
A lot of critical thinking and tough questions to ask vendors before you dive in with both feet. And this kind of connects to my next question, Greg, which is, I've heard you talk about the binary trap, and I've noticed this myself, is that recruiters often fall into one of two camps. Either they're trying to automate absolutely everything indiscriminately, or they're sort of ignoring AI and saying, oh, well, I'm better off without it. And it's, they're almost in denial. What's your sense of that?
Yeah, I think the way you describe it is exactly what's happening in many cases. And then people almost start to convince themselves that their point of view is right. So, hey, recruitment's a human game. Judgment is everything. The tech is actually getting in the way. And there is an argument right now to say that that's probably true, but it's not long term. I think saying you don't need the technology, it will leave you on the shelf, right? On the other hand, trying to automate everything, I believe, is a mistake, and that is a point of view based on the conversation we've just had about influence and empathy and creating outcomes and managing the process, which I believe, and the whole concept of it's the only business where what you're selling can say no, and therefore you can do everything. I mean, we all know a recruiter who's done the process 100% right, and at the last minute it falls over for a reason that has nothing to do with the recruiting. My boyfriend wants to go and live in Peru. How do we manage that? So it's much more important. I'm not being facetious. It's a much more important thing than it sounds, because it means that the art of listening, the art of discovery, of not making assumptions, is a huge recruiter skill, along with pushback in the right circumstances, etc. So then you've got people who want to automate everything. And I think, look, the way I describe it, you may have heard me say it before, I think it's a marriage of art and science, if you like. It's being a bit poetic. But the science is the tech and the art is the influencing skills. And I feel that's the future. Again, when I say future, I think the next 5 years is you need to design your recruitment company around making sure that your technology, I think if you don't have the technology, once it starts to work well, you'll be left behind, because others will be screening more quickly, managing it with logistics, getting their database to be efficient. All those things will start to happen and you will still be making the odd phone call, your history. On the other hand, if you automate everything, I think you will make more and more mistakes, and it won't succeed either. So it's that blend, and that's going to have an impact on what you automate, big decision, what skills your recruiters have, huge decision, and what types of people you hire, actually, is it going to be critical. It's going to be a little different, I think, to what we've hired in the past.
Okay, I'd like to follow up on that in a second, because that's an interesting train of thought. In terms of adoption, like, I assumed even fairly recently, because I'm thinking about AI and automation all the time, and I'm very interested in it, and I'm trying to apply it in my business, that most recruiters were the same. And I actually asked a group of recruitment leaders recently, like, how would you rate, and on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your current adoption of AI? And a lot of people get themselves a 1 or 2 out of 10. Several give themselves 4, 5, and 6. And that was about the maximum score. And these were this was a self assessment, obviously, and it's not scientific in any way, but people are still very early in their journey here, and I think many are hoping that the ATS or whatever tools you're using is going to figure it out for them, and it will just be embedded in the tech, and they won't really have to change or learn themselves how to how to use this tech. But what's your sense of kind of the adoption, and what do you think that means for the industry?
It's a good question, and the answer you will your suggestion based on your ad hoc research is very accurate. Now, I'm not talking about recruiters using ChatGPT and somebody using a note taker. Let's put that to one side. But a sophisticated integrated AI platform, I have a sense of it because I don't know anyone of the hundreds of recruitment company owners who've actually implemented anything. So that's point one. But point two, Bullhorn put out a survey of it was in the UK, and I think there was 1,200 recruitment companies, and over 80% have either done nothing or consider themselves to be at the exploratory stage. Only 16% have actually implemented some transformative integrated AI. So it's very, very low. It's very, very I don't know because it's not my world, but I imagine big corporations that have big hiring needs might be adopting tech more in a more sophisticated way on the talent acquisition side. But I don't know.
As well, obviously. Yeah. The tech companies are the early adopters of this stuff, which has, I think, affected tech recruiters in the last year or so more than any other sector. But I'd love to circle back to your point that the types of people that we hire is shifting or needs to shift. And I speak with recruitment business owners all the time who, you know, they tell me that it's really hard these days to find good 360 recruiters, that skill set or the willingness to do what it takes to get good at all parts of running a desk from the client side and the delivery side is really difficult. What do you see as the profile of person that leaders need to be hiring in order to continue growing their recruitment companies?
Well, it's an evolving discussion point as the tech improves and takes chunks of the job away from a recruiter completely. But the model that we've known for many, many years with big recruitment companies and small of taking in rookies, but the degree may be a couple of years' experience, could even be in retail, might be in accounting or something, and then training them. I don't think that is happening nearly as much. And I don't think it, and that's also a little bit to do with market growth or lack of, but I don't think that's going to come back in any big way again. I think you've got to look at what the skills are. So let's think of what we've discussed so far. I actually believe that one of the big discussion points, I'm giving a webinar tomorrow on my playbook for the future on recruitment, and obviously tech's part of it. And what I'm saying there is that one of your decisions as a recruitment owner is how do we need to get recruitment work done going forward? Because if you just stay with the legacy way of doing work, you're going to fail. And there's three broad areas. One is a lot of it will be automated. We've touched on those parts. And that will then free up the recruiters to do the sophisticated business development consultative work. If you're going to move to a retained model, you've got to sell value around advice and insights and process. And a lot of recruiters do not have any of those skills, let's be honest, right? They just do not have those skills. And a lot of those who don't have those skills will not be able to attain them because they don't have the core competencies. So I think if you believe what I've said, that a lot of the job will be automated, the part of the job that a 360 recruiter did that was the repetitive transactional work they won't have to do. So they've got to be much better. So they've got to be much more emotionally intelligent, much better listeners, much better questioners, much stronger. And I don't mean this in an aggressive way at all, but the word I use is pushback, and I don't quite like it because it's a bit American and it suggests confrontation. I don't mean that. I mean just questioning why and advising. You know, I wouldn't do it that way. And then storytelling. We tried that, getting people back into the office for 5 days. I know that's what you want to do. But I heard a consultant say this on the phone before Christmas, and it was a brilliant piece of consulting. The client wanted to hire a finance person, and he said, we've gone back to 5 days in the office. And she said, fine, Mr. Client, I've heard that's happening. But if you and I go out into the marketplace and require this highly skilled person to have 5 days in the office, you and I will be fishing in a very shallow talent pond. That was her words. And then she explained what she meant. And by the end of the conversation, the client had agreed to 3 days in the office. And, you know, I followed up with her. She filled the job and she made that happen. A less skilled consultant would have just said, well, the client's telling me 5 days. I'll go and find that. And this is a tiny little example, and it's as old as the hills in recruitment anyway. But what I'm saying is those are the skills. And more, you really got to be helping your clients with workforce. You should be selling decision-making, not placements. It's a different way
of
thinking.
Say more about that. Selling decision-making rather than just
you're selling,
placements.
Your skill should be, I can help you make better decisions around work, around your labor force. I'm not just selling placements. You're moving from a resume pusher to a true advisor. And I use these words advisedly. You know, resume pusher sounds insulting. Well, I was that to a degree. I'm just saying it's an evolution, and that's going to dictate the type of people that you can hire. I think they're going to have a little bit more ability, credibility, authenticity, and the ability to be in the room with senior people, both literally and figuratively. Whereas a lot of recruiters are not in the room. The clients don't even answer their emails, you know, honestly. So, you know, the client says it's urgent. The recruiter works his ass off for 5 days, comes up with a shortlist and doesn't hear from the client for a month. Classic. You're not in the room. You're not at the table. You're not in the tent. Whatever analogy you want, you're not there. and you have to be.
Greg, these are not new skills though. So that's, I think, the thing that's going to strike people is like qualifying a job order and challenging the assumptions of the client or the job requirements and trying to expand the job brief to make it easier to fill. That's like a fundamental recruiter skill. But I wonder if those kind of core skills have been lost to some extent during especially the boom in, like, you know, 2021, 22, 20, early 23, where the jobs were so plentiful that people started sort of cutting corners and you know, operating by email rather than through conversations. And we need to go back to that to some extent.
Well, there's an element of that. I mean, let's be what you're alluding to there. I describe as recruiters hiding behind digital and competing on resume spamming. It's a harsh language, but it was kind of true. And if you took enough shots at goal, even though half your shots were terrible, you'd score a few goals. I don't believe that's the case. And a lot of these skills that I'm talking about are literally the ones I learned in the 1980s.
Sure.
That's all we had, right? So I'm not speaking like some aging baby boomer, even though I am one. I'm not harking back to some forgotten era. I'm saying that this is now where the value is. I mean, it's the same with doctors and lawyers, et cetera. They don't have to pore over the lab or the history of the law because that would be given to them. It's going to be more about their ability to interact with clients or customers, patients, and create outcomes that way because the data will become easily available. I use a word, I've invented a word, I call it a techno-empath. And I say recruiters have to be techno-empaths. And what I mean is it's that marriage of art and science. The empath is the listening skills, the situational judgment, ethics, morality around behaviors, because tech doesn't have that, persuasion skills, relationship building, intuition, storytelling, which is a great skill. And you know, even in my public speaking sort of career, you know, I've done a lot of it, people sometimes stop me in the street or whatever, and they say, "I saw you speak," and they can tell, they can retell a story I told that made a point, because it made an impact. And I hear good recruiters telling their clients and candidates true stories, to help them see that this is what's happening in the market. So consultative selling. So that's all on the empath. On the techno side, and this is different to the 1980s, obviously, but you've got to be very literate in automation and AI. You need to be running, if tech is employed in your business, and it will be, because you won't be surviving if it isn't, then you have to be not one of those dinosaurs who's like, "Well, I'm a human recruiter and look at my numbers." Because that's the beginning of the end when you think like that. They've got to understand how to use the technology, we've talked about building personal brand for many years. I think it's going to shift to building, and it's going to rely on authenticity, right? Instead of like pictures of birthday cakes and I got the top prize, people are going to gravitate towards experts who can prove their expertise through their advice, credibility, and expertise. So that's also a techno skill, really. Cybersecurity awareness needs to be part of a recruiter's skill set. Critical thinking around I think even those recruiters who are using AI, they're then going, "Well, this is AI, and AI said this, so that's it." It's not. It shouldn't be like that. It should be, "Well, AI says this. Let me check what's been missing," because it's not. I mean, I don't know if you've ever done this. But I, and this sounds very self-indulgent, and I'll tell you the story in detail if you want to. I don't think it's necessary. But I asked ChatGPT some questions about me in the public domain, and it got 50% wrong, okay? But then when I pushed it, it made it up, 100% made it up. Because I asked it in the end, I asked it, what cities around the world has Greg Savage spoken at recruitment conferences, and it listed 50 cities, half of which I've never even been to in my life. So then I said, I asked it this. I said, "Tell me jokes that Greg Savage has told from the stage." And I thought, it's going to say, "I don't know. There is no jokes." How would it know? It listed 25 jokes. All of them were the most ridiculous dad jokes. Like literally the jokes were things like, "An Irishman and a parrot walked into a bar," like as if I'd never heard it. But it said, now you might say, what does it matter, Greg? You're being all very self-indulgent there. But think about it. What if somebody else had said, "Tell me the sense of humor of Greg Savage"? You know, I'm not looking for gigs, but if I was, that would be rather unfortunate. But what if it had said, someone asked it the question, "Tell me racist things Greg Savage has said from the stage"?
Oh,
is it going to make that up? Is it going to make that up too? You know? So, and that's ChatGPT.
Greg, I think one of the best use cases of AI currently is not so much ChatGPT, but AI, which is trained on your proprietary knowledge. And you're one of the few people who's created an excellent example of this with your, I don't know if it's called Greg AI, but that's how I think of it, is you've created an AI, you know, knowledge base trained on everything Greg Savage, you know, said in his trainings or speeches. And could you describe that a little bit and how that works? Because I think that's a really clever use here.
Well, it was very clever, and it was not, you know, the technical side of it was none of my doing. It was pitched to me by a guy called Darren Watts, who's actually one of the founders of JobAdder originally. He sold out 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And it's called Ask Greg. But basically it is a Chrome extension. So it sits on the user's screen, and you'd have it on your ATS, you can have it on LinkedIn, you have it in 4 or 5 places, so it's always there. And it's a little avatar of Greg. And I love it because I'm about 25 in this avatar and looking pretty good. Anyway, the point of it is, I've trained it to be able to go to the 225 hours of training on my academy, which is recruitment training and recruitment leader training. Some of it's bespoke. Others is film of me speaking at conferences around the world. And there's actually 8 or 9 other trainers on it, but about 80% of it is me. And so if you think that, you know, Greg Savage knows something about recruitment, if you ask ChatGPT, if you ask Greg, he only gets the answers from what's on the library. So you will know that you're getting advice, if you trust the advice in the first place, that it's that advice. Whereas if you go to ChatGPT, it will drag it from everywhere and it gets it wrong, as we know. I mean, I use it all the time, don't get me wrong, but I don't take it at even simple things. If you ask who won the Rugby World Cup for the last 10 Rugby World Cups, it often misses, it gets one wrong. So it is not something you can rely on 100%. So yeah, that's what it does. And the reason we did it is it brings to life and allows people to ask questions that will help them in the flow of work instead of, let's go for a 1-hour training session and all sit and watch it. I mean, that's still good. But much better, I think, is I'm about to call this candidate. I think she might have a counteroffer. Let me just say to Greg, hey, Greg, if you can talk to it as well, and it'll talk back and give you, what should I think about if a candidate's got a counteroffer? Give you 8 or 9 points, and that'll point you to the full video, which you can then watch it. So, yeah, we did that over a year ago, and I don't know anyone else who's done specifically that. I'm sure others will catch up, but they won't have.
What's great about it is that it probably remembers your training better than you do. Like, you, to be able to recall 220 hours of training, like, at your fingertips, you would need to prepare, right? You couldn't just...
100%. 100%, that's true. I mean, I've asked Greg in the testing phase, and it came up with quite a smart answer. And I said to the guys, I never said that. They go, well, yes, you did. That's bloody good. I forgot about that.
So, right.
So, yeah, it's good in that sense. And, you know, I'm not saying it's foolproof or the best thing on the planet, but I think... I mean, there's an example. I think the way people learn, so you're obviously younger than me, but you're certainly old enough to remember that we learned, we sat down, we read a book, we listened to a lecture. People want things in bite-sized chunks. And I'm not talking generational stuff because that's boring. I mean, even I want, give me the short version. How do I do this now? We're more immediate. So, and yes, we will also read, you know, a Shakespeare play or a novel, and we might watch a movie, but we also watch TikTok, which gives us a 10-second thing, you know. So I think
exactly
that's what I'm building into the learning there is you just want to know 5 points. You're going to see a client, and you want to remember 5 things to do in that meeting. Well, you can do that on the train on the way there.
Fantastic. This is awesome, Greg. So if people want to learn more about your academy and Ask Greg, then what's the best website for them to visit?
Well, it is my main website, which it was gregsavage.com.au, but I've shifted it to the SRA, the word, the SRA, Savage Recruitment Academy.co, because I'm trying to, believe it or not, sort of de-Greg Savage it, because it's not only me, and you know, I'm not going to do it forever. So if you go there, there are demos. One of the interesting things, I think, is to look at the 12 pathways, which gives you the entire library. So you get a really good feel what's there. You can look at the demos. And if you are a company who wants to, you know, look at getting multiple subscriptions, my guy who knows more about it than me will give you a live demo. So yeah, it's very, you know, it can get, if you take on a sort of cost-wise, it's very approachable, you know, if you take on, say, 10 licenses, which means, because you need each of your recruiters to have this if they're going to ask Greg and use it all the time. See, that's the thing. I want people to use it. And what we have found, interesting enough, and this is getting on to, you know, maybe a slightly different topic, but when people use it, it's like a gym membership. You know, if I buy a gym membership and I don't go, when I get my subscription invoice, I'll say that didn't work. It's the same with this. When we get people churning, which doesn't happen often, but it does happen, it's always a case they haven't used it. So as soon as they use it, like if I go to the gym every day and I'm feeling healthy, when my membership comes up, I'll go, that's the best money I've ever spent, you know? It's the same with the training. So I haven't actually reached that stage.
Exactly. It's a good analogy. I use the same one, you know, it with our coaching program. If you have a personal trainer, they can write you the program. They can give you a shopping list. They can give you the recipes. They can even like come to the gym and encourage you, but you have to do the reps and eat the food. Like, I can't do that part for you. And so this works if you work, basically.
Most of progress in life works like that, unfortunately. You actually have to do the work.
You need to do some work, exactly. Greg, this was fun to catch up with you. Thanks for helping us celebrate our 300th episode.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure, and thank you for inviting me. And sincere congratulations on 300 episodes. I mean, can that be turned into sort of a book or a library? And it sounds like a huge amount of content there.
Exactly. Well, we're working on our own AI chatbot as well that knows all my podcast content and all the training as well. So that's coming out in 2026. But and a book potentially. We've got lots of things going on behind the scenes, Greg.
I've got no doubt whatsoever, even though you're in the back blocks of Scotland somewhere, you're at the forefront of recruiting. So well done.
Awesome. Well, look, enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you so much, Greg. Talk to you again.
Thanks for having me on your program, Mark, and I hope people found that valuable. So,
to wrap up, here are my top three takeaways. First, if you're evaluating AI tools right now, ask yourself one simple question before you buy anything. What specific recruitment problem does this solve in my business today? Second, think about the moments of truth in recruitment. Job order intake, candidate qualification, client and candidate prep and debrief, offer management. These conversations should never be automated. Make the effort to master these pivotal stages in the placement process. This is where you personally can influence the outcome. This is how you earn your fee. And third, one of the highest ROI use cases for AI right now is your own database. Most recruitment databases are underused and out of date. If you use automation to refresh, re-engage, and reactivate the candidates you already own, you'll make more placements. If you enjoyed this content, remember to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss another episode.